Back to Sports Time on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. This hour brought to you by Jaguar Land Rover Bluff City. Here once again are Brett Norsworthy and Bryant Dacus.
Back in Sports Time, Bryant and Brett with you as we start our third and final hour on this Monday afternoon. And joining us now to talk the Grizzlies, DeMichael Cole, the Grizzlies beat writer, over at the Commercial Appeal. He joins us now. DeMichael, thanks so much for joining us. The season has finally come to an end. I know we'll talk a lot about the exit interviews earlier today that you were in attendance for, but over the weekend, the final two games of the season, the Grizzlies lost both of them, 147-101 on Friday against Houston, 132-101 on the road against Houston last night. At least they were consistent out there. What did you see in those games? I don't even know how to describe those two games, especially that one on Friday night.
Yeah, I saw a team that had a goal of getting as high as they can potentially in the draft lottery. That's what we saw, and the Grizzlies pulled that off. They got up to number six in the draft lottery. The Mavs won on the season finale, so you created that. You didn't have to worry about the tiebreaker scenario there. So it was a successful weekend in that way, but we didn't get to see, you know, much of, you know, Cedric Cowell didn't play over the weekend, no Cam Spencer over the weekend. Juwan Small played a little bit. So it's mostly the 10-day contract guys, a couple two-way players, you know, got some more playing time as well. But the priority was clearly trying to maximize that draft value.
DeMichael, I hear a lot of people talking about the improvement of G.G. Jackson and going forward with him or a big piece in a trade deal. I look at the last 3 years, and I hear that and see that this year about G.G. Jackson, but I know what the competition level was. We got that 2 years ago. In the 1 year that he faced any real competition and was really counted on, he couldn't do much. What do they have in him?
Well, I think, you know, when we talk about guys becoming professional players after pretty much, you know, having similar arcs like G.G. had, like you have guys who are physically dominant for most of their life, and then they get to the league and guys are, you know, comparable from a physical standpoint, there's an adjustment that has to be made. And I think G.G. Jackson, you know, is one of those players that had to learn. That, hey, it's not going to be done the easy way here at this level. You know, we see it across sports all the time. But to your question in terms of what do the Grizzlies have in G.G. Jackson, I think this season he figured out his niche. He figured out I don't have to dribble the ball six, seven times to create a shot. He figured out when I get to the rim and I use my size and my frame in addition to my athleticism, I can be an effective and more efficient scorer. He figured out the importance and the meaning of playing defense and rebounding the basketball. So he's starting to learn, you know, get a better idea of what his role can be. Whereas when he was a rookie, he's just out there, you know, going through the vibes. He's trying to score. He's trying to impress people. He's trying to do whatever he can. So I think that's pretty much that best sums up that situation.
Didn't he lead the team in dunks?
Did he lead the team in dunks? He probably did. I
think so.
Yeah, he probably did. Because it wasn't like there were many other people dunking on the team this year. I'm pretty sure that would be accurate.
Yeah, no, I think him or Omax would be my only two guesses of yeah, the most dunks on the season. So with G.G., I know Brett brought it up of kind of being a trade piece. You've kind of heard a lot of people talk about that, of maybe moving him, or even I've seen some people say package him with Ja to maybe sweeten a deal with a different team. What would you say the percentage for you of G.G. Jackson being back on the Grizzlies on opening night next year?
Say about 70.
Okay.
Which pretty good chance, yeah. But you got to leave that door not just cracked open, but, you know, definitely a little bit more open. The thing is, he has an option this year. I'm fully expecting them to pick up that option, without a doubt. They're going to pick up his option. And once that's done, then you have, you know, bigger conversations in terms of, you know, going into a contract year potentially, wanting to go ahead and move him as you go in a direction with some of the other wings, or if you want to kind of prioritize him as part of this group. You know, Gigi was still the youngest player on this team, even this season. You know, he's been the youngest player on the Grizzlies for now three consecutive seasons. So I think, you know, it's just more of a question of, you know, what they're going to do in the draft and what wings they'll continue to prioritize. And we know Cedric Cowart's going to be in that equation. Jalen Wells is continuing to, you know, do his thing. So it's going to be about how Gigi Jackson kind of fits into that, because, you know, if he doesn't, then, you know, they're probably going to make some moves.
Let's stay on the percentage game. The percentage that Ja Morant opens the season next year with the Grizzlies, and the percentage he's with the Grizzlies at the end of the season next year.
Man, I said probably 5%. Very low for those, because again, it's this situation. I mean, we see what it's become, right? Ja Morant wasn't at the exit interviews. Ja Morant didn't participate in the jersey giveaway. Ja Morant wasn't at the MVP party, you know, for the fans in March that they had at the zoo. So you're seeing, and I'm not saying that Ja is like purposely ditching these things. It's more of you're seeing kind of the disconnect be broadcasted in kind of a professional or borderline professional, unprofessional way, where it's a situation where, look, the two sides clearly are trying to go about it the right way. But again, for years, we've seen Ja Morant be a priority for the Memphis Grizzlies. And in that case, we've seen, you know, anytime the Grizzlies have these big events and they could broadcast Ja Morant in front of the fans, they would do that because he's the star player. So given the context that he's the star player and we're seeing these absences, we're seeing these were basically a situation where, you know, it's just trying to keep Ja kind of like in hiding a little bit. That speaks loudly. That speaks loudly, and that's telling people, you know, that the future is one that probably doesn't include Ja Morant.
Mm-hmm. On the topic of Ja Morant, you mentioned he was not a part of the exit interviews today. Were you surprised that he wasn't a part of the exit interviews? And then you mentioned some of those things about him not being a part of different events at the end of the season. There's been a lot of talk about that, some things being said. I know some former players have said things about that as well around the NBA. What do you make of that situation? What can you kind of tell us about that and him not being a part of those events?
Yeah. What was the first part of your question again?
Were you surprised that Ja wasn't included in the exit interviews today?
Yeah. No, not at all. I fully expected it and kind of knew that would be the case. I mean, it's not a situation where the Grizzlies really want kind of to broadcast Ja Morant out there in that situation, because you don't know what he's going to say, and you just kind of want this situation to die out probably from their side. So I think that's part of the thinking, whatever you think of that as kind of part of the thing there. But in terms of with Ja Morant not speaking, now getting to the other part of your question, which is about just these events and Ja not being at them or whatnot. So going back to, like you said, the latest one, which was the jersey giveaway at the end of the season. So what the Grizzlies ended up doing was they pretty much selected 10 players. So it wasn't that Ja was the only player that wasn't there. Like Zach Edey also, you know, was another guy who didn't give away a jersey. And I think Contavious Caldwell-Pope, Ty Jerome, you know, there were some other guys. But, of course, Ja Morant is the big name there because he's the guy who he's basically built this thing around for the last 6-7 years, and he wasn't included. So I think, you know, it was, I don't know if the Grizzlies thought that this would be the case, but it definitely is a situation where, you know, you add a little, you know, more fuel to, you know, a situation that was kind of starting to probably die down a little bit like they wanted to, but then you have that happen and it just adds more to it. I think in past years when they've done the jersey giveaway, you know, I usually, if I recall correctly, you usually see the entire team come out there and participate. So the fact that it was select players, you know, was already kind of, telling or just, you know, something that you looked at and thought, you know, in a way. But, yeah, that's kind of been the theme here lately. Again, you had the March event for the MVP Grizzlies season ticket holders, and I had season ticket holders asking me, hey, why isn't John Morant here? Why isn't John Morant here? And then he was, you know, again, not at that event, and then exit interviews as well. So it's just the fervor of the situation right now.
Yeah, no, it is. It's definitely an interesting situation. Out of everything you heard today at the exit interviews, what stood out to you the most?
Oh my man, what stood out the most? There wasn't a lot of revealing information, and a lot of this was just kind of reaffirming a lot of the things that we know and feel and think, you know, about the future and the present, you know, of this team. Zach Kleiman continued to, you know, speak on the idea that, you know, the Grizzlies are building, you know, this team in a younger direction. I guess if there is one thing that I had to choose, I would say probably, you know, when I asked him about Ty Jerome and his future with the team and if he, you know, be on the roster next year, he basically confirmed that that's the plan. He said, absolutely. And a couple reasons that stood out to me. Number one is because when you're in a rebuild, sometimes when you get those players who you can kind of sell high on, they have controllable contracts, those are the players that you try to move to get even more assets. But he spoke really highly of Ty Jerome, and it sounds like, you know, he's in the plan, you know, going forward. And then two, when he was asked about Ja in a similar fashion, and this happened first, he said that he didn't want to talk, you know, he wouldn't comment on any potential transactions regarding players. But then when he was asked a similar question about Ty Jerome, he goes, oh, yeah, absolutely, we expect him to be here. We expect Ja to be here. It was a different tone. So, again, I know a lot of people pay attention to what's said on the paper, but you got to look at what's not said, too. Mm-hmm. And with the Ja situation, for years, we've seen, you know, Zach Kleiman stand up there and say, yeah, Ja's a franchise player for us. We're building around Ja, all of those things. And this year, it was different. The tone was much more different. So it's like, if you can't read into that and see what it means, then it's like, I don't know what else to tell you, because he's not going to just get up there and say, yeah, you know what, we're trading Ja Morant sometime this summer. Like, that does him no good.
DeMichael, do you think they have a plan for the future?
I think they have an idea, and the plan will come into play, you know, as they figure out, you know, what draft pick they'll get and the draft lottery and whatnot. But they have an idea, and the idea is, you know, to build a team that's big, that's fast, athletic. You know, they want to build a team that kind of models, you know, what Boston has done over the last few years, OKC. You know, they want to be one of those teams where you can't just pick on smaller players or bigger players that are immobile and things like that. So they're really changing the way that they built their roster out.
Okay, on the bigger players, that's the way that the sport's going. So does that rule out some of these smaller type point guards with one of those lottery picks? And then on the too big, what does that do for even a healthy Zach Edey?
You know, it's an interesting question, Brett, because I'm going to work backwards. Let's start with Zach Edey, because Zach Kleiman basically said that they believe in Zach Edey from the standpoint of his mobility and things like that. So they believe that Zach Edey can be that guy. And when he played this season, you know, when they went 7-4, Isolo talked about it today. Kleiman talked about it. Like, that is a big talking point. You went 7-4 with Zach Edey on the floor. I think Isolo pointed out that the Grizzlies had the number two defense, number six net rating in that time when Zach Edey was on the floor. So it is something they really believe in. They don't think that he is, you know, someone who, like we saw at times his rookie season, you know, would be just constantly targeted, you know, in those situations. So they believe, you know, in Zach Edey and kind of, you know, his makeup and what he can be. Now, to the smaller guard, that's an interesting point, because Darius Akos is the one who jumps out. He's 6'2", but he's super talented. And it's going to be an interesting thing, because I'll say this. No, he is not the prototype of what they're going for in the future. But depending on where they draft, they might have to just talk themselves into it and build around it. For example, you know, if you draft top five, you might want to pivot somewhere else and consider a different type of player. But with their pick supposed to be right now, well, the slot they're in is number six. So if they end up falling to seven or eight, which is probably the most likely case scenarios given the odds for everything, if they fall to seven or eight, then you're in a situation where you need to come out of here with a talented player that's going to make your team better. And even though Darius Acuff is going to probably have some of those same limits that you had with your previous point guard or whatever, it's still a situation where you're going to get people interested, and you just got to build the team around that. Like, some people say, oh, you can't win with a small point guard. Some people say, oh, you can. I'm of the opinion there's ways to work around it. Like, I used the Knicks example right now. I used the Allen Iverson example when, you know, with the Philadelphia 76ers, where you have to put bigger wings around them mm-hmm. to kind of make up for, you know, their shortcomings. And you have to have good rim protection. So yeah. When you think of, you know, the New York Knicks, it's like, yeah, they got Jalen Brunson. But guess what? They got OG Anunoby, Mikal Bridges, Josh Hart. Like, you're not, they're not just going to let you attack him and win the game.
They have Cat. Yeah.
They got Cat and Mitchell Robinson on the back end. Like, they have, you know, a solid line. Exactly. So the thing in Memphis is you had John Morant on the perimeter and whatnot, but like Desmond Bain, solid, but he isn't Mikal Bridges or OG Anunoby, you know, defensively. And you know, you had Jaren Jackson Jr., but it was a whole nother level when you built those rosters like that. Like I just talked about, you know, the 76ers. I mean, it was a different brand of basketball back then when AI went there, but he had Aaron McKee. Great defensive player on the perimeter. Eric Snow, great perimeter defensive player. Dikembe Mutombo, you know, at the rim. So just different looks and better looks.
Mm-hmm. How much did you learn about Tomas Isla, the coach, this year?
We learned a lot about him, just a lot about how he thinks, how he processes things, you know, his patience with the process. I think, you know, he's going to be an interesting guy to kind of follow as the Grizzlies go into this next era. But I tell you what, one thing, and I just touched on this a little bit earlier, but you just get the idea in the sense that Zach Edey is a big part mm-hmm. of what he wants this team to be. And, you know, he talked a lot about how, you know, the changing and the involvement of the roster really didn't allow the Grizzlies to kind of just stick to one plan at one point of the season and just continuously build on it. He said every time certain injuries happen, maybe they have to tear something up and completely pivot to something else. And, so I think he handled all of that well, given, you know, the context of the situation.
If we're sitting here 1 year from today and it's another win total in the 20s, does anybody in management pay the price?
Yeah, for sure. There's no way that should be the case next season. Even, you know, you're going to have some young, talented players, but they should definitely be building in a positive direction come next season. So I think, yeah, that probably would be a problematic finish because they weren't even supposed to be there this year, mm-hmm. you know, if they were healthy. So I think given the added context that Cedric Howard has showed that he can be a winning player, Zach Edey has showed that he can be a winning player in terms of the team's net ratings when those guys are on the floor, you have the chance. I mean, you're going to have three picks in the top 33. So you have a chance to potentially come out with two to three impactful players in the draft, in addition to some of the other guys you got on the roster who are a little bit older, like Ty Jerome I just mentioned. A solid base for them should be 30-something odd wins, depending on, you know, and we'll see how the league does with this tanking stuff. Like, you could definitely see a situation where, you know, February gets here and they trade a couple guys and, you know, they kind of pack it in the rest of the way. There's some added context that needs to be added. But yeah, I think the goal should definitely be improvement.
Mm-hmm. Last thing for you, DeMichael. A lot of people have been wanting to hear something from the organization in terms of kind of commitment here to Memphis. It was asked of Kleiman today. What did you make of his answer to that question of kind of being here in Memphis?
Yeah, it was a little funny at first because he basically, you know, started off like, "Hey, I'm the basketball guy. You know, that ain't really all my lane." But you know, he further dived into it, and I think, you know, he handled the question, you know, a decent way. Like, they have said things like they want to be here in Memphis and whatnot. He mentioned, you know, kind of the downtown area and everything that's coming around that, but. As long as these lease negotiations are going on, I think, you know, for the Grizzlies, they probably feel like it's a tricky spot, right? Because you want to keep the pressure on the city to get something done, but you also have, you know, kind of a commitment to Memphis and the fans here to stand up, you know, for the city when you have LeBron James, Draymond Green, and others, you know, kind of making these comments about Nashville and all of that. So, you know, it's a tricky position because of the situation now, but it's also one where they definitely should have said something by this point. And, you know, seeing Zach at least comment on the issue was progressive.
DeMichael, on that front, do you think at some point during the summer, be it from the mayor's office or from the Grizzlies, kind of a clear the air, this is where we stand on the lease?
Yeah. I think that, by the summertime, you should hear something like that. You know, like, it's people talk, and again, there have been talks of this thing being progressive for over a year now. And, I think that's a good way to outline that.
Yeah, well, we'll see what happens over the next couple of months. But, DeMichael, as always, thanks so much for joining us. Enjoy the rest of your week, and we'll talk to you again next Monday.
All right, take care, guys.
Thanks, DeMichael.
Thank you, DeMichael. And next Monday, when we talk to DeMichael, we'll talk about kind of around the league and who he likes in the playoffs. And, you know, the NBA took a lot of the drama out of those opening rounds when they went to four out of seven.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, they did. I think, you know, wanted to, because obviously you want to protect those top seeds and not letting funny business.
Dikembe Mutombo clutching that ball for Denver and who was he with? Yeah, for Denver against George Karl in Seattle.
Uh-huh, yeah, so no, they don't want any funny business happening in these first rounds. So, you know, the more games, the easier it makes it.
I can't blame
those tough seasons. No, not at all. Not at all. But excited about it. Excited about these games tomorrow night and Wednesday with the play-in. And certainly we didn't get to it with DeMichael. Just ran out of time with everything with the exit interviews. But still a lot to watch for right now for the Grizzlies with that second pick. You've got both the Suns and the Magic. You know, reminder, the best first round pick for the Grizzlies, the worst of those two, I guess you could say, goes to the Grizzlies. And so obviously right now the Magic, they are the lower seeded team, with the Suns being a 7 seed in the West and the Magic being an 8 seed in the East. The Magic have the worst record, so all eyes on that pick. So if something happens here, if the Magic lose both games in the play-in, I believe that pick drops into the lottery, which would be huge for the Grizzlies. If not, though, you're talking about something in the teens, so definitely a lot to watch in terms of where that second pick is going to be over these next couple days with both the Suns and the Magic.
Loaded draft.
Yeah, very loaded draft. So it's going to be a lot of fun, and we'll see how it plays out. And by the end of the week, we'll know exactly where that second, or hopefully around where that second pick will be, and we will have a better idea of where the Grizzlies will be for both those picks. But before we get to a break, let me remind you about our 5 o'clock sponsor. It's Jaguar Land Rover Bluff City. Jaguar Bluff City has been the premier Jaguar dealership for the greater Memphis area since 1984, and their talented team is ready to help you find your next perfect vehicle at unbeatable rates. Swing by Jaguar Land Rover Bluff City today and check out those brand new models like the Range Rover Sport, the Range Rover Velar, and the Defender. Test drive the Range Rover Sport, where luxury meets performance. Perfect mix of style, performance, and versatility, with options ranging from 360 horsepower up to 635. It's also available as a plug-in hybrid electric vehicle with $7,500 federal tax credit when leased with approved credit. Take a look at the Range Rover Velar, powered by mild hybrid technology and enhanced with the latest well-being features and fully connected entertainment system. The Range Rover Velar is the ultimate luxury compact crossover. Purchase yours today and get special 4.4% for 72 months financing available with approved credit. Don't forget about the Defender, available in multiple models to fit your needs. The Defender is built for the modern Explorer, and Jaguar Bluff City is offering special interest rates for 60 and 72 months on various models. Give them a call, 877-259-6169. Go online to jaguarbluffcity.com, but head out there, test drive these vehicles. 6335 Wheel Cove, just off of Quince, for Bluff City Jaguar. Well, let's get to another break, and when we return, we'll talk about what's trending.
Join the voice of the Tigers, Dave Woloshin, for Wolo and Friends. Weekday mornings from 10 to 11, here on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Now, back to Sports Time on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. This hour brought to you by Jaguar Land Rover Bluff City. Here once again are Brett Norsworthy and Bryant Dacus.
Welcome back into Sports Time. Bryant and Brett with you as we've got about 30 minutes left in today's show. We got to talk about what's trending and a lot of things trending this afternoon as we talk about. Got a lot of Major League Baseball tonight. Got the NBA play-ins starting tomorrow night. So plenty of things going around. But the transfer portal wide open around college basketball. A lot of teams already making moves. A lot of players already committing. Louisville had the big weekend around college basketball. But still, another day. Aaron Bradshaw still not in the portal, still nothing official from him. I mean, at some point, you just enter the portal to enter the portal and say you're going and field offers, even though probably fielding offers behind the scenes with an agent of some sort. But no commits just quite yet for Memphis. I know they've been setting up some visits. They've had some Zoom meetings with different potential players, but still wondering if they are going to have one more back or not.
That's the three portal takeaways for me. Mm-hmm. Bradshaw, and what's being built at Louisville, mm-hmm. and Iowa State, and the Tigers play them both in play Iowa State opening afternoon, mm-hmm. and then play Louisville in December at FedEx Forum.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, you're seeing the teams that are having success around college basketball in terms of building teams next year, and you know, a handful of them are on the Tigers' schedule. And I just saw on social media Jizzle James, the guard for Cincinnati that entered the transfer portal after the year. He just committed to Charlotte. So following his head coach there. So Charlotte, you know, bringing in a talented guard. So, you know, a lot of teams that are going to be on Memphis's schedule already going out there in the transfer portal and making moves. And what Louisville did over the weekend to get Badunga, who, I mean, by all accounts and a lot of people that put together their rankings, he was number one on the transfer portal rankings. They also went out and got a really talented guard from Oregon, who was out for most of the season, in Jackson Shellstad. So, I mean, they're doing some nice things over there. So Brian Hodgson, obviously that's not a team Memphis will face, at least on their schedule right now, but he's going out there making some moves, bringing in Dink Pate, who was on that G League Ignite team. So some big-time moves around college basketball for some teams that have a lot of history and connections with Memphis.
The Dick Vitale news really hits hard, but he is taking it just like he always has, head on, really very aggressive and going to fight for sure. 86 years young. Brian, I don't want to be too over the top because nobody starts anything. I mean, it takes a lot of people. But you could really give both as a company for ESPN and college basketball, with the intersection of ESPN and mm-hmm. college basketball, late 70s, early 80s, you could give a lot of the growth and credit to Dick Vitale being that ambassador, that and that goodwill, happy warrior, sunny disposition that he always had. I do not want to speak ill of anybody deceased, but Billy Packer would often kind of pick at Dick Vitale and try to pick a fight, and Dick Vitale would not do it. Mm. He would not do it. He would laugh it off and kind of, you know, slap Billy Packer on the back and, you know, I got my deal and you got yours. Mm. And what Billy Packer was doing, he was more or less accusing him of being a cheerleader, as you know, as you know, really not a serious analyst, and he would just write it off and go, you approach the game the way you want to, and I'm going to do it the way I want to.
Yeah. No, it is really impressive. I mean, just what, you know, take away obviously these fights and how strong he's fighting and the, you know, positive outlook that he has on everything. I mean, what he means to college basketball, and then kind of what, I mean, you know, anytime you, I don't think you can think of the V Foundation, Jim Valvano, like any of that without thinking of Dick Vitale because of all of the great work he has done with that. And just, I mean, from all accounts and everything you see, just a very selfless human being. And so to see him go through this, which is really tough, and, you know, to get the green light before the season started last year of, hey, things are doing good, you can get back out there and do a couple of games, and to go out there and do that, and then basically right when the season's wrapping up to get – just another wave of bad news, and kind of, hey, we're right back there in the thick of it. I mean, it's just crushing to hear. But, you know, you wouldn't know it if you saw him tomorrow. Probably you would have no idea what he's going through, because he just is such a positive person and is just so happy.
He often would say, "Yeah, I am a cheerleader.
Yeah. Oh,
I really like what I'm doing."
He was, and he did, and you know, it made it fun to watch those games. You know, when you knew Dick Vitale was on a call of a game, I mean, it was, you knew it was big time, but you knew you were going to have a lot of fun watching the game besides what was happening on the court. So, you know, I hate seeing all this news about him and his continued fight, but, you know, like you said earlier when we first started talking about it, you know he's going to fight hard, and you know he's going to do it with a smile on his face.
He was a good college coach at the University of Detroit, mm-hmm. good enough to get the Pistons job out of it. Now, that has been a tough transition for a lot of people, to go from college to NBA. And one of the big personnel moves that he made early in his Piston tenure, and it really cost him, he passed in the draft, and it hit home locally. He had a chance at Sidney Moncrief in that 79 draft that I think Bird and Johnson were in the draft, and he had a chance at Sidney Moncrief. And reportedly, he said, one of the knocks of Sidney Moncrief, who went on to the Hall of Fame, he goes, he plays so hard, he's going to get hurt. And you know, at draft time, you can find a lot of reasons to pick at a player. The arms are too short or whatever. But he thought he goes so hard that he would get hurt. And he took Greg Kelser off of that Michigan State National Championship team because he thought he was just as athletic as Sidney Moncrief, and thought he would sell some tickets locally for the Pistons. So, you know, one of his bigger NBA gaffes, you could kind of understand. But he laughed about that, about Sidney Moncrief for years.
Wow. Well, you know, when
he said, I was right. He played so hard. He played all the way into the Hall of Fame.
Well, you know, you're half right there. You know, it's just the injuries didn't follow it. So, yeah, definitely sad news. But hopefully, good news comes from it, and I know he's going to continue that fight with it.
He had a book out one time, and he was on with us, and it was so great. And Brian, you know, we told him, you know, like you know, we're hard out at, you know, 57. He was rolling. We just roll right through it.
Keep on going. Honestly, I mean, if you got Vitale and he's rolling, you just let him keep rolling.
And he said, he goes, so much for that hard out. I knew y'all weren't going to cut me off.
That's great. Now, he knew exactly what he was doing. But no, definitely thoughts and prayers certainly for him. I mentioned some baseball games tonight. We already have a final. Mariners, don't look now, but maybe they are getting hot. A 6-2 win over the Astros that completes a four-game sweep over the Astros. Mariners really need it. They were struggling. They were struggling at the plate. Started to find some offense over the weekend, especially with Cal Raleigh and Julio Rodriguez, who were ice cold. One game in progress right now with the D-backs and Orioles. And not a full slate tonight, but a decent amount of games later tonight in Major League Baseball.
Yeah, Cardinals in Cleveland tonight. Tickets available.
Tickets certainly available, and don't really know what to expect tonight for the Cardinals. Guardians, the night game last night, it was – super sideways, super early. So I don't know what they're going to be feeling like coming into this game, and who knows what the Cardinals will do tonight. But that, I feel like that's going to be a lot of games for the Cardinals this year.
Yeah, it could be, but the National League Central looks like a pretty fair fight right now. But real, the proviso of is really early.
Very, very early. Very early. A lot can change.
Boy, when I hit that first place, last place picture Saturday morning, I go, boy, I'm going to pay for that in 2 weeks.
That was made my day, seeing that text. And, all right. Oh, no. And what was that? That would have been, August 11th? April 11th?
April 11th. Well, I'll take August 11th. Well, yeah, I'll sign up for that right
that's
now.
That's a completely different story if it looks like that on August 11th. But looking at the standings on April 11th, I love it. Have you seen the growing talk about Mason Miller being a Cy Young candidate this year for the Padres?
I haven't.
He has been on a tear. Like, I will give him credit for that. He has been lights out this season. So far this year, 7 games, 7 1/3, 19 strikeouts, 1 walk, 1 hit, no runs. So a 0.00 ERA and a 0.273 whip. People pointing back to since he got traded from the Athletics, 30 2/3 of an inning, 64 strikeouts, 11 walks, 8 hits, 2 earned runs. That is 0.59 ERA and a 0.620 whip. So some calling for Mason Miller, if he can continue this, that's a big ask, again, April 13th, but that he should be in consideration for Cy Young, which obviously being a closer would be very rare.
It would be rare, but it's happened.
Sure, yeah, but you don't really think of when we're making our Cy Young picks at the beginning of the year. No. None of us are picking relief pitchers.
Didn't Dennis Eckersley do it?
He did. I believe that's right. Yeah,
and that was, and I think that was the year. Now he started as a starter, but then made the switch, and that was the year. Let me get this right: that he had more saves than base runners allowed.
Wow. Okay, that is that's impressive. I didn't even compute in my head how that can even happen. Feels like that shouldn't even be.
I think it's my favorite stat in baseball history.
No, that is. I mean, there's a lot of good. I feel like baseball is the one where you hear stats a lot that you're just like, that doesn't even make any sense. But that's up there. That's really good.
I'm looking at the Google machine. 92. That may not have been the year that he did it. It might have been a year or two before that.
Wow. Wow, that is that's impressive.
Raleigh Fingers in 81. Mm-hmm. Okay,
yeah. So I mean, obviously, has happened before, but very rare. But if you're talking about a relief pitcher that can do it, I mean, Mason Miller, even before you read the stat line out, he would be the pitcher you would think about of being the one that could do it.
You would. What did the A's get back in return? Do you remember? Are they helping?
One is their top prospect now. He was part of that deal, if I remember correctly. But I don't remember exactly everything that came back. I think it was a lot of prospects. But I don't remember exactly.
I hope they got a good haul.
Yeah, no, I hope so, too. Let's see what the trade looked like. Leo DeVries, who is
that's AL Rookie of the year.
Yeah, so he's –
who's still in Triple A, but I knew that.
Double A, I think.
Oh, a Double A. I didn't know that.
Double A right now.
That's going to be a contract thing. They're going to bring him up later, though.
Yes. It feels like. I don't know where they're going to play him, though. Maybe second. He's at Double A right now for Midland.
He better hope he gets called up because it'll be hot out there all summer.
It sure will be. But that was the prize piece of that. And so I mean, he's a top prospect in Major League Baseball. That's a pretty good return for you.
Yeah.
You can work with that. A shortstop that will be one of your top prospects. You could certainly work with that. But it's been fun, and the A's have been hot as of late. We talked about it earlier. Those 5-game losing streaks for both
my AL manager of the year.
Sure. I mean, looking great right now.
Wild card team
for
me.
Honestly, again, This is like the fourth time in this segment we've had to say April 13th. Yeah. But when you look at the Yankees and the Mets, both on five-game losing streaks, and the big reason is because the Athletics are going in and beating them, that's impressive for the A's. That doesn't happen very often out in Sacramento. I haven't seen the Sacramento jerseys yet. Now, I haven't been locked in to the A's just quite yet, but I haven't noticed.
Where on the jersey is it?
No. They have a jersey that across the front this year has Sacramento on it. So they are. They have one jersey that is a Sacramento jersey. After last year saying, we are not doing that at all, they've kind of gone back on it and said, we will have a jersey.
But the stadium is underway in Vegas.
Yeah, no,
I mean, it's going to happen.
They're making work on it. But
the stadium may be finished about the time we get back to baseball after the impasse.
True. But, you know, it was always kind of weird to me. Like, I get it. You're not technically the Sacramento. But it felt like they almost went out of their way to be anti-Sacramento when they got there. Like, we want no part of Sacramento. We're just here for a pit stop. It's like, you know, you do have to sell tickets while you're there. You do want people to come to your games. So maybe they looked back on that and said, you know what, maybe we'll just give them a jersey. We'll have a
maybe
Sacramento
they learned
jersey.
From the Tennessee Oilers.
Well, that could be possibly a factor of it too. There's certainly in the past some good explanation or good examples you can point to of saying, maybe we shouldn't do that. But the A's have been a fun watch recently. But we need to wrap up today's show, get to our final break. And when we return, we'll wrap up today's show with Moe's Crunch Time.
Broadcasting from the Family Leisure Studio, we are Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Time is brought to you by Moe's Southwest Grill. Need a crunchy bite to eat? Head to Moe's for nachos, crunch wraps, tacos, salads, and more. Moe's.com is your go-to for all your taco crunch time emergencies.
Now, back to Sports Time on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. This hour brought to you by Jaguar Land Rover Bluff City. Here once again are Brett Norsworthy and Bryant Dacus.
This is pretty cool, and we're just getting started.
Spanning the globe.
Go crazy, folks! Go crazy!
This game has always been called the world's greatest cocktail party. Do you know what is going to happen here tonight?
This is for all the biggest crunch time.
You are looking live. In your life have you seen anything like that?
Crunch time between the hedges.
The ball game is over, and Memphis has its first win in 16 tries. Its first win ever against its fierce in-state rival, Tennessee.
Goodbye!
Hammer, nail, coffin, this baby is over.
Crunch Time is brought to you by Moe's Southwest Grill. Need a crunchy bite to eat? Head to Moe's for nachos, crunch wraps, tacos, salads, and more. Moe's.com, it's your go-to for all your taco crunch time emergency. Well, Brett, what I learned today is that the NBA regular season wrapped up yesterday, and that means a lot of teams going to the playoffs, but it also means a lot of teams, their seasons came to an end. But you know what that means? That means coaching moves are happening. We know Doc Rivers is out at Milwaukee, and we'll see if more come open over the next week with some of these playoff teams and what Milwaukee does with that. We talked about it earlier about the Giannis situation, where will he be back next year? It doesn't feel like he will, but maybe depending on who they bring in as a head coach, maybe he might return if he likes that. Maybe Taylor Jenkins is the guy to watch. Billy Donovan, what does his future look like with the Chicago Bulls? I feel like the moves with the general management over the last week or so makes it feel like he probably will be back, but I know he was having a meeting either today or tomorrow to discuss that, so hopefully we'll get some news in the next couple of days. And then New Orleans Pelicans, they'll look for a coach after making that move from Willie Green earlier this season. So only a couple of openings right now, but we'll see if that grows in the next couple days, in the next couple weeks.
I learned that Rory McIlroy, now with six majors, T12 all-time on the majors front, that's tied with Lee Trevino, Nick Faldo, and Phil Mickelson. Five players with seven, the King, Arnold Palmer, Sam Snead, Gene Sarazen, Bobby Jones, and Harry Vardon. Number one all-time, Jack Nicklaus with 18. Sorry, Tiger. Yeah. 18 still beats 15.
18 always tops 15. What I could have done without this really sad, really weird story that came out over the last couple of days with Reuben Bain Jr. As we're getting closer and closer to the NFL draft, now news about how he was involved in a 2024 crash that led to a death. It led first to a coma, and then later that victim died. We've learned today that Reuben Bain was the driver in that collision, but a lot of questions now of kind of why is this coming to light now? I don't remember back then. I don't remember anything about this story back in 2024, but obviously with the draft, these teams doing their due diligence and getting all of this information, but definitely a sad and very weird story out of Miami.
I was sad to see the passing of Phil Garner, Vol for Life, Scrap Iron, part of We Are Family, hit 500 in the 1979 World Series, 12 of 24, and the closest I've ever came to cursing on the air. He was in a big dust-up. It was summer in 93. Me and Paul Hartley's on the air together. George was on vacation. George was always on vacation. It was me and Paul in the summertime. And Phil Garner got in a beef with someone, and I said, you don't want to mess with Phil Garner.
I barely got it out.
Wow. It was almost the wrong word.
I love that. Where are you beaming tonight?
Beam me to the Mets and the Dodgers.
All right, yeah, that will be
and those big
a fun
budgets.
One. Yeah, that will be a fun one. We'll see if the Mets can get on the right side. I talked about this Athletics team. Let me go check out this Athletics team tonight, see if they can keep rolling at home against the Rangers.
Yeah, that would be fun. A's over 500.
Crazy. Hard to believe, but it's going to be a baseball night. It is 10 games on the schedule today, one already final, some hockey out there as well, but everybody gearing up for the play-ins tomorrow night in the NBA. But that's all time we have. Enjoy the rest of your night. We'll talk to you again tomorrow afternoon.